Pete Fornicialis, Sunday Morning. Let's continue now with the title track from Joni's second album at WNEW-FM.
Rows and flows of angel hair and ice cream castles in the air and feather canyons everywhere. I've looked at clouds that weave, but now they only block the sun. There's rain and snow on everyone. So many things I would have done, but clouds got in my way. I've looked at clouds from both sides now, from up and down, and still somehow it's cloud illusions. I recall I really don't know
Let's take the jump to Ladies of the Canyon then, which of course occurred right in the middle of your Crosby, Stills, Nash connection. This of course is the album that contains songs like your version of Woodstock, of course, and the one we referred to earlier, Rainy Nighthouse, For Free is on here, Willie, things like that.
But you haven't heard that record probably since I made it. I don't think I've heard that.
Really? Not even by surprise on the
not
radio somewhere?
No. I mean, I think it's been years. I can't even remember what's on that.
Do you...
Let me see the jacket a minute.
Is it something that you avoid by design?
No, it's just by the time you finished a record, You know, you've... For instance, this record, we've been working on from February to September. So... When it's turned in, unless somebody wants to hear it and you sit down and play it, and then there's a kind of a vicarious pleasure from turning somebody on to it.
Yeah.
You become, you know, you say, oh, and we did this here and we did that there, and you can get into it in. But by the time you've finished listening to it and mixing it, you know, you don't really want to hear it.
Well, there's also there's another trick that I guess time will play that neither of us can have any idea about right now. For example, this is 15 years ago. Let's go 15 years from now and look back at Dog Eat Dog. The song Ethiopia might have a completely different coloration. Oh, I hope it might have a completely different coloration 15 years hence. Do you agree?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think that some songs have more... some songs become classics. In other words, they are a general enough statement that they can write... that they still have a validity in another decade. And some songs, if they're of a political nature, often they become kind of a historical curio with time on them.
Yeah.
You know... they belong definitely to an era.
On and on,
you about one specifically from Ladies of the Canyon, which of course is Woodstock. That had a specific meaning at the time. Do you think it maintains a general meaning for today that is applicable or not?
Well, I don't. In this culture, of course, it's a curio. I would say it's a curio. It's associated with the past. But when we were on, we're touring in '83, playing it in Australia, which was just going through its social consciousness. You know, with their, it was half punk and half hippie over there, and it took on a different. Many of the issues that we had dealt with here in the '60s, they were dealing with over there. Conservation, ecology issues were coming up because it's a younger country than the States, and it's about to make some of the same mistakes. So there, in that context, it took on a whole new vitality. And the other place, surprisingly, was the place it really ignited was in Ludwigshafen in Germany. And they have, of course, the Green Party.
Uh-huh.
They're going through some kind of change. And playing to that audience, it was a brand new. It seemed to strike against that audience as a contemporary issue rather than a historic event.
Have a song on the new album that I think is it's a non-specific song that I think applies equally to then and now, and that's Impossible Dreamer.
Oh yeah, Impossible Dreamer is these are funny times we're in my opinion, the rock critics, I don't know whether this is a trend that emanated out of England. I think that's where I first saw it. It's the fulfillment of Warhol's prediction. Everybody will have their 15 minutes of fame, you know, and there's a hostility towards success. Now, in England, it goes to the extremes where a band, it's like a flavor of the day almost. As soon as a band gets airplay, there's a tremendous amount of, the press starts to tear them down almost immediately. It used to be that you could count on maybe 4 years of favor, like a presidential election in this country, but now, the press has become, there's a tendency towards real vicious criticism. You know, I don't know, maybe I'm still an idealist, but to me, I read my reviews, for instance, and I think that I could be critical of this new record. I know where the bones are buried. You know, I know what I think is up to my standards and things that didn't quite come off. But that's where you get your direction for the next project anyway. And that's, you know, you just don't make a perfect record.
Hmm.
But a lot of the criticism is that I see comes back. Good criticism has the possibility to inspire growth. Bad criticism just makes you angry, you know, and there's a tendency to a style in young journalists to be critical for critical's sake. You know, the more negative things you can say about a project, you know, the hipper you are, it seems to be. Now, I don't want to give the impression that I've had only bad reviews, but when I've had bad reviews, the bad reviews that have come on this project have not been intelligent. They've just been kind of the things that they've attacked have been kind of unjust. There are things, it's like the same kind of injustice, like attacking a person for being fat. There are things you can't do anything about, you know what I mean?
Oh,
it's
sure.
Like, to me, good criticism, it would adjust to, well, anyway, we're getting off.
Well, there's a kind of humor prevalent in this country right now on both television and in nightclubs and on radio, unfortunately, that is very negative, very derogatory, and I think a complete and total waste of time. But you're right, another subject, another time. When I heard Impossible Dreamer, I heard John Lennon.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you say yes, but with a reservation.
Well, I guess the reason I went off on that tangent is that's why I say Impossible Dreamer, because certain kind of delicate emotions, like this is the time, it seems to me, of, with a few rare exceptions, this is not a heart time. This is not a time of heart. It's not a vulnerable time. Anything with that kind of delicacy is fair game in a way. It's a fun time. Let's have fun. It's a time to. So Impossible Dreamer comes from. It's kind of a tip of the hat to the beautiful idealists that, ironically, most of them were assassinated. Almost like the very presence of that idealism drew down immense hostility.
Yeah. So it's not only John Lennon, it's Martin Luther King.
It's Christ. It's, you know, heart people. All heart ideas. Kill the heart ideas. Right. Mm. So it's a tip of the hat to those Impossible Dreamers.
Joni Mitchell from the new album Dog Eat Dog here on Mixed Bag at WNEW-FM in New York. We'll continue right after these words. To go along with our special program today, we have an extra added bonus, and that is five complete sets of Joni Mitchell albums to give away. And all you have to do is write the name of your favorite Joni Mitchell song. Maybe not as easy as it sounds, come to think of it, on a postcard, along with any other comments you may have about today's program, and send it with your name and address to Mixed Bag, care of WNEW-FM, 655 3rd Avenue, New York, 10017. One postcard per person, please. We'll pick five cards at random, and those winners will receive complete sets of Joni Mitchell albums, courtesy of her three labels over the years, Reprise, Asylum, and currently Geffen Records. And it is all courtesy of Mixed Bag, and
this is the place where rock lives. 1027 WNEW-FM, New York.
This is Pete Fornatale back with you on Mixed Bag with my special guest this morning, Joni Mitchell. We've been taking a tour through her albums, and I realized that if we stopped to talk about each one to the degree that we should, we'd be here well into next week. So maybe, Joni, the way to handle this, since we do want to bring it up to date, is kind of get off the top of your head impressions of the albums as I hold them up to you. And we had just arrived at one that was a very important one in your career and a very important one in the hearts of your fans, and that's the Blue Album.
The Blue Album is, I like that album. There's a cleanness to it. At the time I made that album, I don't know how to explain this. I was a reluctant star, okay? You know, like, I like playing little rooms, but I never, the big roar, there's something always unnatural about drawing that much attention to yourself.
Somehow I think we knew that about you.
So that album was, that's a very pure album. There's not a beat of artifice on it. I mean, it's like, there's at the time that I made it, I had no defenses. Now, you can't go around in the world with no defenses, and soon I had them. I grew claws again. But during the time that it was conceived and performed, I didn't have any. And, you know, I was a real vulnerable creature.
Painfully personal.
It's painfully personal, but I guess that's the beauty of it. I mean, I'll never be like that again, you know. I have defenses now.
Needles, guns, and grass, lots of laughs.
star, and I said, constantly in the darkness, where's that at? If you want me, I'll be in the bar, on the back of a cartoon coaster, in the blue TV screen light. I drew a map of Canada. On it twice. Oh, you're in my blood like holy wine. You taste so bitter and so sweet. Oh, I drink a case of you, darling, and I would still be on my feet. Oh, I would still be on my feet.
Were the defenses in evidence by the time For the Roses came out?
That's a build back. That's a build back. You know, I went into my hermitage there. I retreated to a piece of property that was infinitely interesting. The light was different on the water every day. There was a lot of wildlife. I got myself back to the garden. I thought, you know, I took my own advice and and went back there to... With the optimism of living off the land. Well, I am too urban, as it turns out, and in a year or so I was back in the cities again. But it was a good period of retreat.
Dare I open this twofold cover?
We were going to put that on the front cover at one time. Joel Bernstein. We went up to Mount Baldy, which is a mountain near outside of Los Angeles. We were going to put a starry sky over it, so it would be like a Magritte, half day and half night.
Yeah.
And it was supposed to go on the front cover, and Elliot said, Joan, how are you going to like it when you see 298 plastered across your ass? So, but, you know, I put it on the inside.
That's wonderful. And it's a beautiful picture, by the way.
I think, it's supposed to be, like Aphrodite, the Aphrodite,
sure.
And the clamshell,
yeah.
Pose?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
It's art.
Heard it in the wind last night. Sounded like applause. Did you get around resounding for you way up here? Seems like many dim years ago since I heard that face to face, or seen you face to face. Though tonight I can feel you here. I put these notes on butterflies and lilac sprays from girls who just have to tell me they saw you. Heard it in the wind last night. Sounded like applause. Chilly now, end of summer, no more shiny hot nights. Is this the arbutus rustling and the bumping of the logs? And the moon swept down black water like an empty spotlight.
It's almost like flashcards here. We are up to Court and Spark.
Court and Spark is, still kind of a return to society, coming back to society. There's still a lot of I don't know how I would like the world to be, it's funny to be I don't know what to say about that album.
It's great just watching you think.
There's a lot of dissatisfaction still with lifestyle. You know, I mean, ours was an experimental generation. Definitely we had something to rebel against. You know, and the act of rebellion was a necessary one. And even the generation that we rebelled against finally said so. You know, but the trouble was that, like all critics, we had a lot of strong opinions, negative opinions, but we didn't have any solution on how to we didn't have a plan. We acted against it, having nothing to build in the future. That's one reason I never got involved in the no nuke things, was, you know, I thought, well, at the point where, supposing that we got our way, supposing that the nuclear plants were all taken apart and so on, this would be great news, but what do we do then? You can't just tear something down without really having something intelligent to, as an alternative. And you know the little old lady in the Midwest with a toaster and a Mixmaster and a blender and all of these appliances, you know, is not going to relinquish them. We've gone too far into this technological society, which runs on juice. Where's the juice going to come from? You know, the nuclear idea is a horrible idea, but there isn't a better one. You know, even the dams, which is the old idea, the damming up of waters, does unbelievable things to our weather. Sure. So nearly everything, I mean, basically we're a monkey, you know, like we're supposed, you know, and suddenly we have all of this brilliant, twinkling wiring running all through our society, you know, like sometimes I get this technological overview and it drives me crazy. Yeah. I know that we have to go forward, but we're so sophisticated, but we're so primitive, and everything that we do positive backfires somewhere in our environment.
To decide.